This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 22, Tourmaline.
Stop it!
Vel slapped away the tiny green hand that was attempting to slyly creep up his thigh again.
No means no!
He pulled himself away from her, his mechanical hand gripping the edge of the cart tightly. But already at the very edge of his seat, he had precious little space left to move.
I would!
Sabine let out a deep cackle as she scooched right along with him, her fingers tracing idle designs on his bare forearm.
But I got a thing for damaged goods.
He resisted the urge to shudder once more, but forced his mind elsewhere as the old woman continued her lecherous pursuit. He was too weak to walk on his own, and, after much protestation, he'd allowed himself to share in her offer of riding along in the palanquin. Once free from the dank moisture of the cave, they traded slick rocks for woodsy terrain. The entrance, half concealed by thickets of brambles and purposefully placed logs, had been guarded by all manner of large, heavily armed forces. They sprang into action at the sight of their leader, trading out her awkward ride for a simple, uncovered wagon, where they began to load the baskets and bushels of gold. Just one in a line of many, this cart was being hauled forward by a massive, toad-like lizard, and several hulking ogres, each carrying a crossbow that looked like a miniature ballista, walked along the procession as they scoured their surroundings for any threat. Vel had done everything he could think of to be reassigned to one of the carts. But, as the Bandit Queen put it, it was safer for him to be close,
in case you fall out again.
She had laughed in his ear. As he felt her hand on his thigh once more, he shot a pleading glance over at Pyra. Walking uncomfortably beside the procession of wagons, she wrinkled her nose at the grotesque display and turned to look at something else.
So, Sabine, where exactly are we?
She gestured with her good arm at the forest around them, and then down to the tiny trail they were following.
I thought you were last at Ember Run.
Unable to pry her eyes away from her newest obsession, the goblin belted out a cackle.
That's where we are. We're just north of there. 15 more minutes, and you'll be able to smell the gnolls.
Choking back a gag, Pyra placed a hand to her face at the memory. Back in the days following the Battle of Death's Tide, they had been forced to relegate the gnolls to the outskirts of the camp, or send them on patrol duty. The walking, fur-covered men perpetually smelled of wet dog and rancid meat.
But I don't recall there being any caves near the fort. We scouted the surrounding areas thoroughly. I think I would have remembered an underground lake.
Sabine scowled and looked up.
Yeah, I ain't too happy you found out about that. Or the Cavalli, for that matter. I told them opening up another entrance was likely to get us noticed. I just never figured they'd be dumb enough to send somebody through from the other end.
She turned in her seat, locking eyes with the other queen.
How'd you end up in Uharia, anyway?
Pyra tilted her head.
Another entrance? There are more than the two?
She had seen other offshoots during their journey, but she had just assumed they only led deeper into the caverns. Her mood souring, the goblin sighed and leaned back in her seat, fishing out the long smoking pipe from within her robes.
Of course, it's not really a lake. It's more like an underground ocean spanning the entire continent. Currently?
Sabine paused to stoke a flame into the end and placed it between her teeth, giving it a long pull before exhaling a plume of white smoke.
There are about 6 openings in Ebra that I know about. Only this one and the other are actually usable. The others we buried intentionally to hide our routes, or are just blue holes that lead out into the sea.
She pulled the pipe from her mouth and pointed it at Pyra.
And before you ask, no, I ain't telling you where they are. Chances are I'm going to have to close this one soon as you're gone.
Why? The Cavalli would be welcomed in Ebra. I'm sure Elias...
No!
Sabine crossed her arms, giving the queen a dangerous look.
You'll have to forgive me if my confidence in your husband is a little short at the moment. I'm still cleaning up his latest mess.
At the look of confusion on the other woman's face, Sabine let out a mirthless chuckle.
You're joking, right? City's popping out of nowhere?
She gestured up at the sky with her pipe.
Blue lightning? Any of this ringing a bell?
Pyra scowled.
Something odd happened at the Infinite Tower, I'll grant you that. And the resulting storm somehow deposited us in Uharia. But all that was halfway across the country.
Ignoring the return of the goblin's hand on his thigh, Vel's attention had been pulled back to his surroundings. He had picked up on it before anything had even been said. There was a scent in the air, something out of place. He thought maybe it was the gnolls they had mentioned, but it was something more. When he had arrived in Avis, the pollution was so thick it could be considered a type of weather. But in his time spent there, he learned to differentiate between the smells, like the smoke from coal versus crude oil, chemical fires, wood stoves, foul cooking, his workshop during one of Atticus's visits. But the one smell it didn't have was that of burning rubber. As they exited the thick woods, the cluttered skyline gave way to a gray haze over a massive dead stretch of land. The earth was ashen, devoid of even the scrappiest of weeds, and throughout the barren expanse sprawled a sea of tents, wooden forts, and endless people. Just beyond was a sight that caused Vel's stomach to drop. In the distance, a modern cityscape broke the horizon. Towering skyscrapers dotted the urban outline, but many of the buildings were leaning or collapsed, and a thick, acrid black smoke rose from the still glowing flames. Sabine pointed.
It's a bit more than just the tower, Queenie.
As her eyes fell across the strange silver city, Pyra's hand moved to her mouth. Ember Run had been the seat of the Twisted Army for almost a year now, fighting back the encroaching forces of the other nations and the Brotherhood. But now, it had been transformed into a refugee camp for the citizens of whatever city lay crumbling in the distance. Displaced people in odd clothing huddled together in tents or sat around campfires for warmth, their expression of grief and disbelief echoed her own. She clutched at her chest, the tightening there becoming almost painful as her eyes washed over the faces of the lost. Was her husband responsible? Wilfred had warned them nothing good would come from their endeavor. Could she have altered this course? Perhaps if she had protested harder, but she had been preoccupied by her husband's obsession with destroying the Brotherhood. She had never even considered his crusade could have been the lesser evil. A baby wailed from nearby, and tears began to leak from the corner of her eyes. The Brotherhood had carried out countless atrocities, many just as horrifying as this. But was Elias any better? She sucked in a deep breath through her nose and shook her head. Of course he was. None of this was intentional, she was sure. Even if this had been Elias, of which she couldn't be certain,
the Brotherhood's acts of evil were carried out with careful consideration. This had been an unintentional accident. Not that that made this excusable. But her husband was not a bad man. Even now he was, no doubt, searching for a way to fix what he had done. Pyra raised her head, setting her resolve with a new goal to focus on. She had to return to him, to aid him in whatever way she could. Her thoughts were pulled from the moment as a large metal carriage with no horse rumbled by them, carrying a load of strange people. As she followed their odd display, her eyes landed on Vel. He looked similarly introspective, as he hadn't even noticed the green fingers creeping up his leg. She realized his thoughts probably mirrored her own. After all, Eric was his brother.
"Is that a roach coach?"
Vel stood up, his metal hand bracing himself on the front of the wagon to keep from toppling over. He watched the clunky vehicle, painted in garish yellows and greens with the words "Guillermo's Street Meat and Taco Truck" emblazoned on its side, as it parked in the middle of a line of other food stations. They ranged from giant pots of stew and spit-roasted animals to outdoor propane grills, camp stoves, and delivery trucks handing out crates to others of the food brigade. There was even a man standing behind his hot dog station, dumping a fresh vat of sausages into the water. Had the people lining up for a hot meal not looked so haggard, or the destroyed city still burning on the horizon, he could have mistaken this as nothing more than a music festival. Sabine chortled.
"Yeah, it's one of the few good things to come from all this. You want one?"
Vel screwed up his face as he made a noise of disgust. Despite the rumble of his stomach, he wasn't sure he would ever be brave enough to try anything from a food truck. But one thing was certain. Whatever that city was in the distance, it wasn't from the same world Avis had been on. And judging by all the acid-washed jeans and sneakers he saw, it was closer to his own homeworld and technology. He was about to voice his concerns when several people screamed. All eyes turned towards the sound. For a moment, there was nothing, but then the unmistakable sound of a gunshot rang out. People began to scatter, breaking around their little party as they fled. If not for their oversized escorts, they likely would have been trampled or had their carriages stolen. But not many people would willingly run into an ogre. Flashes of bright blue began to erupt all around the encampment, followed by the sound of explosions and the strong smell of ozone. Undine instinctively grabbed Pyra and moved them both closer to the wagon.
"What is going on? What is that sound?"
A crack of blue whipped through the air in front of them, pulling open into a swirling blue vortex. Vel's eyes widened with recognition. How many times had he seen his brother do this? He half expected Eric, with his lopsided grin, to stroll through. But an unfamiliar man stepped out instead, landing neatly on the front of their caravan. He was clad in black robes that hung heavy over golden ringmail. He jammed his thumb down on a small device in his hand, and the vortex snapped shut. Blinking in surprise at the heavily armed monsters that now surrounded him, he lifted a rifle and aimed as several more portals opened behind him. Without even thinking, Vel lunged for the man. His foot caught on the ledge of the wagon, and he stumbled forward, but he still managed to sink a fist into the intruder's face, to which the man reciprocated using the butt of his rifle. Stars exploded in his vision, but as he fell back, he reached a hand out, grabbing a fistful of those black robes and hauled the cleric down to the ground on top of him. A heavy knee sunk into Vel's ribs, forcing the air from his lungs as a gauntlet-clad fist slammed into his jaw. But he kept struggling, wrestling for control of the rifle. Normally it would have been easy, but in his weakened state, his mechanical arm felt just as useless as his injured one. But as the robe figure reached back to punch again, he managed to twist the firearm free and flung it to the side. It was too long for close quarters, and despite wanting such a weapon to defend himself, it would likely be taken back if he kept hold of it.
"Filthy half-breed!" the cleric shouted as he lunged for the weapon.
Bell clawed at his robes, attempting to halt the man, but a swift kick of an armored boot was enough to convince him to relinquish the fabric. He nearly blacked out in pain and shied away, tucking into himself protectively. He felt another attack slam into his spine, and he wrapped his mechanical arm over his head, praying that if he was shot, it would hit something protected and not something vital. He heard the cocking of the gun and clenched his eyes shut, bracing himself. But there was no explosion of gunpowder. Instead, there was only the sound of bolts being loosed and the horrifying thunks as they found their target. Lifting his mechanical arm, Vel peeked out to see the cleric laying still in the dirt with two large shafts protruding from his chest. Heavy footfalls rumbled the earth as the ogres charged into the fray. The sounds of battle erupted around him, deafening him as he crawled toward the cover of the abandoned wagon. He spat out a concerning amount of blood as he slumped against the large wooden wheel. He wasn't going to be much use to anyone in this state. He was really starting to miss Amy, all things considered.
With a weak pant, Barry made several grunts of frustration. Somewhere north of the ruins of Still Harbor, the gigantic bear found himself held tight by a web of vines as thick as a man's leg. Even his powerful jaws could not chew himself free, given the purple magic that still imbued them. He had exhausted himself struggling to escape, and was now too tired to do more than scratch at the dirt with a single claw. Bear paws were not designed for delicate work at the best of times, and, held tight as he was, it was difficult to even see what his claw was doing. But he had not been given the title of the brightest mind of this generation unjustly. Panting with effort, Barry moved with slow determination. It was his seventh such attempt, but as he lifted his paw away to peek beneath, he allowed himself a pleased huff, careful not to disturb his work. Success! At last, a single, half-legible rune glowing faintly with orange magic. He slapped his paw down, flooding it with energy. A warmth spread up through his limb and into his fur, and the vines attached to him there burst into flames before immediately fizzling out. He shook the ash from his massive foreleg and let out a chuffed grunt. One arm was free, but it was no time to celebrate. The spell had only incinerated those closest to it, and he was still cinched tight to the dirt by others. With a low growl, he moved his paw closer to the next tangle of vines and began scratching another rune into the forest floor.
All right, show's over, everyone. Get back to work.
Sabine waved her cane around at the gawking onlookers and soldiers. She turned to watch the last of the monks flee into their blue doorways. Teleporting Templars with fire wands was a new one, even for her. Thankfully, the battle had been swift. The invading force had been relying on their odd weapons to make up for what they lacked in numbers. And while that strategy may have worked against most enemies, here it had been a display of poor planning. Her frontline fighters had hides like stone, literally for a few of them, and the loud metal tubes had hardly done any damage. Swords and clubs, however, had proven quite effective against the light mail beneath those black robes, And, after the first dozen or so Brotherhood had fallen, the monks called for retreat. She laughed. Only an idiot would bring a fire wand to an ogre fight. Scanning the area, Sabine found the queen and her bodyguard, uninjured, fussing over the crumpled form of her new bow. Tutting, she hobbled towards them.
Is he alive?
Vel glanced up from his prone position. His face was smeared with blood, and he was holding a hand over one ear, but he nodded weakly. The monk's armored boot had caught hold of the metal plate on the tip of his ear, ripping it and the earring that hung there free. Sabine slowed as she reached him.
Well now, wonders never cease. Handsome and the gentleman? Nobody's ever jumped in front of me like that. I think I may have found my future husband.
His face flushed with color, and Vel was thankful the smear of blood camouflaged it. Pressing a pointed finger to his lips, Sabine offered him a toothy smile.
Hush now. Save your strength. I'll have one of my boys move you somewhere more comfortable to recover.
Her voice had become thick and husky.
The mattress in my personal quarters is made of griffin down. It's like sleeping on a cloud. Just give me an hour or so to tidy up here, and I'll come nurse you back to health.
She gave him a wink that could only be described as predatory, and spun to go bark more commands at her underlings. Vel forced down the urge to vomit at the surfacing thoughts, and turned his pleading looks towards Pyra and Ondine. But the dryad could only laugh at him. The queen shrugged.
I'll admit, it was quite gallant.
He turned his scowling face away from her and brought down his mechanical hand. He had managed to save the delicate gold reminder of his past and sighed in relief. He tucked the earring into his pocket and leaned back against the wagon wheel, bringing his other hand out in front of himself. He had gone after the cleric to get rid of the gun, yes, but that had been his second priority. During their scrap on the ground, Vel had managed to lift something off the man far more dangerous and valuable. Piper would have been proud. He carefully turned over the small, cylindrical device in his hand. It was similar in design to the one Eric had crafted, and he could tell it was definitely a portal locker. A way to find the kids. And maybe even a way to get home. He sighed. Not that he knew how to use it. This device was different, using rings instead of dials, and where there should have been numbers and letters, it was covered in runes. Amy probably could have figured out how to use it, having stored all the information of his brother's device, and she was, after all, a miniature supercomputer. He may have loathed how much she controlled of him, his body and his mind, but he hadn't realized how much he relied on her for other things. He wouldn't admit it out loud, but he also missed her cheeky, nihilistic sense of humor. Vel glanced at the heads-up display in his cybernetic vision. Many of the status bars were reading below 70%, and a few of them had dropped lower in the wake of his latest stunt. Safe mode meant Amy had no live interface. All her processing power was devoted to repairing the system and rooting out the glitch. It was what was keeping him alive and slowly improving. That did not, however, mean he couldn't force a reboot of her interface. It would eat up a vast amount of her processing power. It essentially brought her consciousness back online. He didn't like this idea. But the alternative was playing a game of trial and error with a portal device. The potential benefits outweighed the risks. He blinked 3 times in rapid succession, and his display shifted. A keyboard appeared in the air before him, hovering in his vision like a hologram. He began typing in a command 1 letter at a time. The queen and her guardian gave him concerned looks, causing a chuckle to escape him. From their perspective, he was just jabbing a finger into the air. After typing a string of commands and tapping the Enter key, a series of warnings began popping up in his vision. Enabling interface will halt all progress. Continue anyway? Enabling interface without full system recovery may corrupt functions. Continue anyway? Enabling interface! And on they went, warning him of the consequences. It was a horrible, horrible plan. Vel knew this, but he clicked accept on each one as they appeared until the command finally went through successfully. Everything went black, and for a few brief moments, he swam in the nothingness, bringing with it the terror of his fever dreams. No sound, no sight, not even tactile feeling. Just as he began to panic that Amy may have truly crashed this time, that he may have forced himself into this limbo permanently, he heard a tone and his senses clicked back on. Fuzzy at first, his neural pathways reconnected and his surroundings quickly came into sharp focus. Vel breathed out a sigh of relief as he saw a familiar blinking line in his cybernetic vision.
That was a horrible idea.
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents, Book 4 by Leslie Herron in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
No means no!
Oh, come on! Just this once!
How else can I say this? Never! No way! Not gonna happen!
We just won the battle! Let loose a little!
It's the letting loose that I'm worried about!
Seriously, how bad could it be?
You know what? Fine.
Welcome to Guillermo's Street Meat and Taco Truck. How may I spice up your day today?
Hi there, Guillermo. I'll take
it. Oh, no, man. Guillermo's not here today, man. My name is Anton.
Okay. Can I get 2 number 3s? A number 4 and... how about a side of antacids?
All right. Yeah, you got it, Broham. You want, like, nacho cheese with that?
Hell no.
Yes, please.
Your funeral.
All right. Yo, Marcus, I need a couple of deep-fried gut busters, a fully loaded hat rack, and a side of sidewalk chalk.
I must admit, it smells good. Similar to the time the short one made us those French fries.
Yeah, it's not the taste I'm worried about.
Order up!
Why is the bag leaking like that?
This is a bad idea.